It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies, 57 degrees out at the airport, a full 61 degrees up here on sunny Signal Hill. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day and a high near 61. Calm winds turning to southeast to 5 this afternoon. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a 50% chance of rain after 1 a.m. and a low of 52, south winds to 10. And rain is forecast for tomorrow with a high near 60, south winds to 15. Coming up on the Midday Report, hundreds of members of the Kodiak community celebrated the life of Sawyer Sipola over the weekend. A well-known Metlakatla carver has died unexpectedly. And the union, which represents thousands of University of Alaska faculty, has filed an unfair labor practices complaint against the university.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden's tapping into his Pennsylvania roots as he promotes an agenda to fight crime that would include a ban on assault-style weapons. He's speaking in Wilkes-Barre this hour about crime prevention, gun control, and police funding.
When it comes to public safety in this nation, the answer is not defund the police. It's fund the police. Fund the police.
Biden's delivering remarks in a battleground state a little over 2 months before the midterm elections. Republicans are also making law enforcement issues central in GOP campaigns to win back seats in Congress. The White House says it is ready to help as parts of Mississippi's capital city are without running or potable water. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports a water crisis is unfolding in Jackson after flooding exacerbated longstanding deficiencies at the city's water treatment plants.
The state has declared a public health emergency with no safe drinking water available in Mississippi's largest city. Governor Tate Reeves says Jackson's water treatment system is failing.
It means the city cannot produce enough water to fight fires, to reliably flush toilets, and to meet other critical needs.
Reeves has activated the National Guard to help distribute drinking and non-potable water. Schools and businesses are closing as officials scramble to repair the system that serves about 180,000 customers. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.
Powerful storms have been resulting in power outages across Michigan. Utility companies were reporting more than 378,000 customers without electricity earlier today. DTE Energy said was bringing in crews from across the country to help with repairs. The day after 70-mile-per-hour winds took down thousands of power lines. The utility's projecting most people will get their power restored in 2 days. Billionaire Elon Musk is asking a Delaware court to delay a trial that will determine whether he can walk away from his $44 billion deal to buy Twitter. Musk has asked the judge to push back the trial from October to November. NPR's Raquel Maria Dillon has the latest.
The legal filings stating Musk's rationale are under seal, but he's sent a big clue in a new letter to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Musk cites a former Twitter executive's allegations about sloppy security practices. Twitter's former security chief says the company violated an agreement with federal regulators to beef up privacy on the platform. Musk says Twitter failed to disclose those safety concerns before they signed the contract. And he says that omission constitutes fraud, so he should be allowed to walk away from the deal. Twitter says the allegations are inaccurate and lack context.
Raquel Maria Dillon reporting. It's NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Hundreds of members of the Kodiak community celebrated the life of 7-year-old Sawyer Sipola this weekend. Sipola went missing in early May near his home in the Menashka Bay Road area of Kodiak. His body was found more than a week later above town on Pillar Mountain. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports the event was part of a fundraiser for the library.
More than 200 people, including kids, members of local law enforcement, and even a few dogs, gathered at the Kodiak Public Library on Saturday morning for the Run, Learn, and Play 6K Run and 1 Mile Walk. It was the first morning it wasn't raining in more than a week, and just as slivers of blue sky opened up overhead, a wave of runners and walkers took off toward East Addition Park, just a few miles away. Amy Williams was the event's organizer. She also helped coordinate the search for 7-year-old Sawyer Sipola back in May, when he wandered away from his Kodiak home.
Family wanted to do something to celebrate Sawyer, and Sawyer loved to run, so this was the perfect event for that, and you can hear there's a lot of excitement.
Sipola had autism. He was missing for more than a week before his body was discovered by people recreating on Pillar Mountain. According to the Alaska State Troopers, he died of hypothermia. More than 2,500 members of the community helped search for Sipola during the week he was missing, along with K-9 teams from across the state, members of the Coast Guard and Navy SEALs. Local pilots also assisted in the search, which covered 10,000 acres across the island. Williams says many of the participants at Saturday's walk and run had been part of the search effort, too.
We have great support from the Alaska State Troopers, and which were integral in the part of the search, and so amazing to have them show up and spend time with us this morning.
A GoFundMe page was set up as part of Saturday's run and walk. Money raised will go towards programming at the Kodiak Public Library for kids with sensory disorders. William says the Sipola family will work with the library on what that will ultimately look like. As runners streamed across the finish on Saturday, she said she wasn't surprised by the turnout.
Kodiak is a really special place, and the kind of community support is just amazing.
She says there's already plans to make the Run, Learn, and Play 6K Run and 1 Mile Walk an annual event. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
A well-known Metlakatla carver, known for his poles in Metlakatla and at Ketchikan's Rainforest Sanctuary, died unexpectedly last week. Friends and family of Wayne Hewson remember him as a mentor, a culture bearer, and a fixture of life in Metlakatla. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
When things were good, they were groovy, and when something was cool, it was far out. That's according to Wayne Hewson's friends and family, who chuckle, remembering his favorite 70s slang that he held on to over the years. The 69-year-old father of two was a respected carver who lived in Metlakatla with his wife, Toni, and two sons, David and Daniel. He was in a rock and roll band in high school and later a longtime member of the fourth generation dance group.
He was a really open and kind man. He was soft-spoken. He was really dedicated to his family.
That's David A. Boxley, a Tsimshian master artist and close friend and mentor of Hewson. Boxley worked on 6 poles with Hewson, including Hewson's first pole, raised in 1994 at Metlakatla Senior Center. He remembers Hewson as humble, talented, and proud of the cultural revival work he did through the fourth generation group.
People don't realize how much of an effect they have on their families and their friends and just the world around them, their immediate world. I think that was the kind of guy he was.
He was also an inspiration for Boxley's son, David R. Boxley.
To me, he was Uncle Wayne.
The younger Boxley remembers how Hewson loved to play music. He was well known for his affinity for rock and roll. His instruments of choice were the drums and guitar.
But also, you know, would surprise you and pick up a guitar and just play some beautiful picked, you know, song, just something really pretty, and he had a beautiful singing voice.
He says Hewson was a man devoted to his family.
Boy, he loved his wife, and they were very close. She was with him on a lot of his pole projects, helped him paint, and they were together, I think, 45 years. And, real love story, those two.
William Bolton met Hewson through the fourth generation group. Chuckling, he joked that he always thought Hewson was a little odd.
Odd in the way, I guess, that he was friendly, and he didn't tease like most people do here in Metlakatla.
Bolton worked with Hewson on a few projects over the years. He remembers Hewson as a mentor who was always generous with his time and expertise.
I think the biggest thing is that he was always willing to give people advice, and he never did it in a way that could be taken as mean or attacking anybody. Just that he was willing to share his knowledge that he had and didn't judge anybody for not knowing something.
In the days since Hewson's death, Bolton says he's been reflecting on what the man taught him about carving.
And he showed me that other carvers aren't my competition. That, you know, you could always learn something from somebody.
Clifton Guthrie says that Hewson was someone he looked up to growing up in Metlakatla. Guthrie says if it wasn't for Hewson, he might never have completed his first solo pole. He recalls how Hewson calmed his nerves ahead of the pole raising.
As a carver, I was worried about, like, the whole, you're having guys lift it, carry it, raise it with ropes, and he's the one in charge. And he made, you know, he made a point to put his hand on my shoulder and say, your job is done now.
He says Hewson oversaw the whole event and attended the celebration held afterward. Guthrie decided that as payment, he would give Hewson fresh deer and fish whenever he had it. Guthrie says he's keeping up that deal with Hewson's wife, Toni. Most of all, Guthrie remembers Hewson as a generous man who always made time for those close to him.
He made me feel like we had been friends forever.
A viewing was held in Ketchikan on Monday. A public celebration of life is set for September 5th in Metlakatla. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
An Anchorage man shot by police last Friday now faces 19 charges, including kidnapping and attempted murder. Police identified the man on Monday as 36-year-old Michael Valu and identified the officer who shot him as Curtis Walkenfuss. Police say Valu fired a weapon inside a North Anchorage home early Friday morning before leaving with an elementary school-aged child. Police say the child was related to Valu but didn't specify how. Officers found Valu and the child roughly 2 hours later at a Midtown Anchorage intersection. Police say they ordered Valu to stop multiple times before he aimed a handgun at officers. Officer Walkenfuss fired twice at Valu, striking him in his midsection, according to police. During the altercation, Anchorage Police Chief Michael Curl says Valu tried to use the child as a human shield. Curl said the child was unharmed. Valu was taken to the hospital with what police described as non-life-threatening injuries. He also faces 15 felony assault charges and a charge of misconduct involving a firearm. Police say Walkenfuss has been placed on 4 days of administrative leave while the State Office of Special Prosecutions determines whether his use of force against Valu was justified. The union, which represents over 1,000 University of Alaska faculty, has filed an unfair labor practices complaint against the university's administration. United Academics and the university have been in contract negotiations for a year, and the union's president, University of Alaska Fairbanks Professor Abel Bolt Ito, says the administration acted illegally this spring when it unilaterally declared an impasse and imposed a new contract, despite ongoing federally mediated negotiations.
We're still hoping to get a joint contract with the university, and we will continue to bargain in good faith. And hopefully the UOP filing will be an incentive for the university to finally be reasonable.
Negotiation of a 3-year collective bargaining agreement has continued this summer, and Bolt Ito says salary increases have been agreed upon, except for one issue.
The university proposed in their last formal proposal to give us a 3% raise in the first year, a 2.75% raise in the second year, and a 2.5% raise in the third year. And we have agreed to that, but we want to include a Me Too clause so that if they give other employees higher raises, we will get them too.
Bolt Ito says other contract items still on the table include academic freedom and tenure issues, and whether two faculty groups are included in the three main articles of the collective bargaining agreement.
They want to exclude postdocs and visiting faculty and treat them as second-class citizens.
asked for comment on the unfair labor practices complaint. University of Alaska spokesperson Robbie Graham says it is under review, adding that, quote, "The university firmly believes that it has been bargaining in good faith from the earliest days of negotiations and will continue to do so." The village of New Napachuk has started constructing a new laundromat and water treatment building. That's after the old one began to sink into the tundra and tilt dangerously to one side. If the building collapses, the village may lose access to treated water. The Napachuk does not have any piped water. KYUK's Will McCarthy has more.
It's unclear exactly when the old water treatment plant and laundromat building in New Napachuk began shifting. But in mid-July, Jacob Tabithuk said the situation became impossible to ignore.
I think it shifted about an inch or two last month. The workers were saying they heard a loud crack, like a pop, and then felt the building move. And there was one person who was working. She said when that happened, it scared her so much that she almost ran out the building.
Tabithuk grew up in New Napachuk and is now the city's grant writer. He said as a kid, he and his friends would come into the water building in the winter to warm up, and the building was always relatively level. But in recent years, its southwestern corner has begun to sink, and Tabithuk said the building is already leaning about 20 degrees. He fears it's close to collapse.
It's getting to the point where it's kind of dangerous, because if it shifts on the southern end like 6 inches or more, I think that whole back end is going to fall off. And then when you walk along the building and you look at the walls, you can see that the plywood's kind of starting to warp and shift, or the plywood's starting to crack.
The building houses both the laundromat and New Napachuk's water treatment facility. If it collapses, there will be no other source in the village for running water. Although Tabithuk said that most people capture rain for drinking water, residents use the treated water for doing dishes, washing clothes, and flushing toilets. As a precaution, the village closed down the laundromat a few weeks ago. Residents of New Napachuk have been traveling to Kasigluk to do laundry instead, a 10 or 15 minute boat ride. Kasigluk blocked off 2 days a week for people from New Napachuk to do their laundry. Construction has already begun on a new laundromat and water treatment facility, and crews are currently working 12-hour days. Representatives from the state-run Village Safe Water Program came out to New Napachuk 2 weeks ago to inspect the water building. Jason Bloom, Village Safe Water's program manager, said they recognize that the building has foundation issues, but they have to weigh that concern against the public health concern of having no access to clean water were the building to shut down. Bloom said that they'll continue to monitor the building. Still, Tabithuk has trouble trusting their judgment, in part because the longtime water treatment operator doesn't have faith in the building.
Who are you going to trust? Somebody who never worked there a day in their lives? Or a person who's been working there for years and years? I think I'd feel more comfortable, you know, taking his advice over somebody who came in and just looked at it.
The sinking building is part of a broader concern in New Napachuk, where just about everything is getting wetter and more unstable. Both Tabithuk and City Administrator Juliana Wasili said that in recent years, the town has become increasingly swampy. Many places don't grow vegetation anymore, and large stretches of boardwalk are submerged. It gets worse every spring.
My guess would be the permafrost is deteriorating faster than we can adapt, I guess.
The village has discussed relocation, but there are no hard plans on that front yet. In Bethel, I'm Will McCarthy.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Why we haven't heard from aliens yet. The Milky Way galaxy has 200 billion stars and perhaps 100 billion planets. If even a small fraction of those planets harbored life, and even if only a pathetic scattering of those planets had life forms which became intelligent, our galaxy would be teeming with alien civilizations, some of whom would be either looking for us or discoverable for at least a little while. The number of alien civilizations the galaxy should have can be determined by the Drake equation. That turns these factors into variables. When you plug them into the formula, you find that there should be at least 20 civilizations in our cosmic neighborhood. This makes the fact that we have yet to find any other life in the cosmos almost shocking when you think about it. This seeming discord between how many advanced civilizations ought to be in space and the lack of evidence for any is known as the Fermi paradox. It has led to dozens of hypotheses and potential solutions over the last few decades. Many of the solutions aim at one of the variables in the Drake equation and try to make the supposed number of civilizations lower so it is more reasonable for us not to have met anybody yet. Some propose that life starting at all is rare. Others suggest that the development of intelligence is the bottleneck. Others still posit that most civilizations would live for a short time before blowing themselves up, or conversely, never even manage to invent the radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Tuesday. It is the 30th day of August, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:06. It will set again at 9:12. That will give us 14 hours and 6 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 81 degrees set in 1919, and a record low was 34 set in 1998. Currently 57 degrees under fair skies. They are calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon. Calm winds turning to the southeast to about 5. 50% chance of rain tonight starting about 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of about 52 and south winds to 10. And rain for sure tomorrow, high near 60, south winds to 15. 30% chance of showers on Wednesday night. Cloudy skies tomorrow night, becoming partly cloudy. And for Thursday, just a chance of rain and mostly sunny skies, high near 57. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 4:43 this afternoon. That will be an 8.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 11:48 p.m., almost midnight, of 6/10. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:10 this afternoon and be 14.2 feet in Larsen Bay. Your low tide will happen at 11:23 this evening and be 7/10 of a foot. Let's see what the latest announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has to say.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 33. This announcement was issued at 10 a.m. August 28th. There will be a 72-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Sunday, August 28th, until 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 31st, in the following areas: the central and north cape sections of the northwest Kodiak District, the southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, and the Iqaluit Bay section of the Afognak District. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the outer Karlik section of the southwest Kodiak District from noon Monday, August 29th, to 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 31st. As previously announced, the following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 6 p.m. Sunday, August 28th. The east side Kodiak District, except the inner Ugak and outer Ugak Bay sections, are closed. The Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, the outer Iqaluit section of the southwest Kodiak District, and the Cape Igvec, Wide Bay, Olinchak Bay, Katmai, and Dakovac Bay sections of the mainland district. Closed water adjustments. Closed waters are expanded until 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 31st at Molina Creek to consist of all waters within 1/2 mile of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 251105. Fishermen are reminded that until further notice, in that portion of the northwest Kodiak and southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, Chinook salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are shown on the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in the commercial salmon fishing regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanek, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory for tomorrow. Variable 10 today, seas to 4 feet. For tonight, south 10 in the evening, increasing to 20 knots, seas 5 feet. And for tomorrow, South 25 seas to 8 feet on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, Southwest 15 today seas to 3 feet. Southwest 20 tonight seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow, South 15 seas to 3 feet. Tomorrow night, Southwest 20 seas coming back up to 5 feet. They are saying Friday through Saturday, North 15 seas to 3 feet. A celebration of life for Margaret Lucine Roberts will be held on Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Fognak Native Corporation building on Near Island. The family invites all who knew and loved Margaret to come, share a story, and leave your favorite memory in her honor. If you'd like to bring a dish to share, please deliver it to Susan Malutin at the Fognak building between 1 and 2 p.m. Again, that's this next Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Fognak Native Corporation building. The Iluktik Museum is renovating its gallery. If you'd like to see something specific in their new gallery, join them tonight from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the museum for a special conversation. It'll be facilitated, and it'll be an opportunity for the Kodiak community to provide ideas about what you would like to see in the Iluktik Museum. Come help them envision their future exhibits. Again, that's tonight, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the museum. It's generously sponsored by CONIAG and the Institute for Museum and Library Sciences. At the library tomorrow is the Lego Club. That's at 3:30 p.m. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. On Thursday, the library will host a lap-sit story time at 10:30 a.m. It's for babies 0 to 3 and their adults. Join volunteer Abby Hanna to share a story and a song and some quality time to play and socialize. Call the library for more details, and that number is 486-8686. Also on Thursday at 3 p.m. is the library's next chess club meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a friendly, cozy environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open to all ages. Senior citizens of Kodiak will be having a board meeting on Wednesday. That's happening at 1 p.m. in the multipurpose room at the Kodiak Senior Center. The public is invited. For more information, call the Senior Center at 907-486-6181. But again, that's tomorrow at 1 p.m. in the multipurpose room at the Senior Center. And coming up this next weekend, the Kodiak Rodeo and State Fair. The Rodeo and State Fair go on September 3rd and 4th. Gates open at noon. And the rodeo will be featuring bull riding, junior bull riding, barrel racing, team roping, shoot dogging, ribbon roping, breakaway roping, pole bending, goat tying, rescue race, and more. And of course, at the Kodiak State Fair, if you can make it, build it, grow it, or harvest it, you can enter it. They're calling all artists, photographers, 4-H'ers, students, craftsmen, bakers, gardeners, quilters, anybody who wants to participate in the 2022 Kodiak State Fair. Share your talent with the community. To submit entries, just bring them to the exhibit hall on Thursday, September 1st, between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m., or Friday, September 2nd, between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Also, the Kodiak 4-H's livestock auction and sale is going on. That's also happening this next Saturday, September 3rd, starting at 9 a.m. out at the fairgrounds. Auction begins at noon, and bidder registration starts at 11 a.m. Again, that's September 3rd at the fairgrounds this next Saturday. The Board of Education work session that was scheduled for Monday, September 12th, has been rescheduled for Tuesday, September 6th.
The polls have closed on the August 16th primary election. Preliminary results have been released online by the Alaska Division of Elections. Final results will not be posted until Wednesday, August 31st, giving time for all ballots postmarked by Election Day to be counted, including mail ballots from rural Alaska, from college students in the lower 48, and from Alaskans serving in our military abroad. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20 and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.